The second case for oral argument this morning is in the matter of the alcohol beverage license suspension of Cork and Bottle, South Dakota, for the appellant is Mr. Eric Johnson, for the appellee, the South Dakota Department of Revenue, Assistant Attorney General. Mr. Johnson, you may proceed, sir. You have 20 minutes.
It pleases the court, counsel. This is a case where my client, Cork and Bottle, went above and beyond what the Department of Revenue requires of preventative actions of South Dakota alcoholic beverage licensors to perform when attempting to prevent sales to underage customers.
Just backing up a little bit, your client had been cited for whatever they do for business like that, selling alcohol.
That's correct, Your Honor. Compliance Plus, Minnesota Corporation, they ran a sting, which my client was aware of, and in fact, he placed a, when he received notification of the sting, of the impending sting, he wrote on the letter from the state's attorney that sting is coming, $300 to any employee who takes this ID. So, yes, it was, that's how the violation occurred.
Was the new employee that ultimately sold the beer to the minor, was she aware of this policy?
Yes, she was. In fact, he had, even before the sting came, he had a policy of any ID taken from a minor that was received by that employee that there was a $100 bounty for that.
When you say your client went above and beyond what is required, my question to you then is this: why are we here today?
That's a good question, Justice Amundson. What, as the court is well aware, year 2000, the South Dakota legislature passed and enacted safe harbor statutes, SDCL 35-2-10.1. And under those statutes, prior to that, it was essentially a strict liability standard. If there was a violation in the business, the department came in and suspended the license or imposed whatever the discipline they deemed necessary, and there wasn't any way for the license holder to get out of it, whether they were blameless, whether the clerk had a math error, for whatever reason. Basically, the legislature saw this as a problem. They came in and passed the statute I just mentioned, the safe harbor statutes, which has five conditions that the license holder must meet. Just to sum up, the first is that the licensee did not see the violation. That occurred here. Second
one. That would
one,
be the owner.
The owner, my client. Cork and Bottle. Second, and that's the point of contention that we have here, and the condition that my client did not technically meet, is that the employee be certified by a national training. Essentially what that meant in 2000, and essentially what it still means, is that they go through tobacco alcohol management training, frequently called TAM training. At the time, I'll go over the other criteria. Third, there's a written policy on carding. My client had that. He had all his employees sign a written agreement. Fourth, that the employee has had no convictions of a similar violation within the past year. And number five, that there has been no violations by the licensee or license holder in the past year. My client met all these criteria except for number two. And the reason that he was not able to meet number two, currently is able to meet the second criteria because there's a different program in place with videotapes and they can do that in-house. At the time, he would have been forced to send his employees to Sioux Falls or Mitchell or Rapid City, and at the time when they had those training sessions, they were sporadically scheduled. I believe they cost approximately $50, and in my client's line of business, essentially a convenience store, the turnover of employees is quite high. In fact, he had 35 W-2s that he filled out for the year 2000.
And let me interrupt a moment. Those are all good reasons why the employee shouldn't have to go upstream to save the license. But shouldn't you be making that argument to the legislature when this court can't do it? The statute says it must. This employee did not attend such a program. If convenience stores It's too tough for them to be able to build these programs. Shouldn't you be making this argument to the legislature?
That gets to the heart of my argument, Justice Center. At the time, basically the reason I just explained at the time it was difficult, the department has since changed that, and now he is able to get his clients nationally certified. What my client did do, and first get into substantial compliance, detailed in my brief, this court has on prior occasions used substantial compliance in service of process and notice statutes.
And before you get to that, what about why aren't you going to the legislature? Can't rewrite the statute. It's the legislature that has to consider the ability of convenience store owners to go to trial.
I would agree that that's what should definitely be doing is to try to rewrite the statute. I don't believe that that's really a problem anymore because they have the in-house training.
Whether it's a problem anymore, it's a problem for you in this case.
I can't get it.
And the legislature setting the policy in South Dakota has said they have to be certified. And let me ask you this, was this salesperson certified?
Not technically, Justice Amundson. She wasn't certified.
But did the legislature say it has to be technically certified?
It says has to be certified.
How do you get around that problem? By what you're saying, substantial compliance or what?
Substantial compliance. The court is well aware in Wagner v. Truesdale, and also Myers v. Charles Mintz County, specifically in Wagner v. Truesdale, this court used substantial compliance, essentially get around the specific requirements of the
process. Those are all cases
that
allowed people to stay in court. Had nothing to do with the violation of the policy as far as on liquor sales, did they? State legislature established. None of those cases dealt with legislation.
No, that's exactly correct.
To follow up on that question, are there any cases you're aware of where this court has permitted substantial compliance application to be used in a case where the statute should be strictly construed as we previously held? Statutes dealing with liquor sales should be strictly construed. I'm not aware of a case that's allowed substantial compliance with strict construction case. Do you have such a one case?
I'm also not aware of any such case, Justice Sanders. I would refer the court to SDCL 2-14-12, which stated, the subjects to which it relates, all proceedings under it are to liberally construed with the view to affect its object and promote justice. I would assert that to allow this suspension, 2-week suspension, to occur, punishing severely my client, causing him to lose thousands and thousands of dollars in revenue, were a case where I believe he went above and beyond what the statute required would work an injustice. Correct the court to that.
Well, now this schooling that the state has allowed for the safe harbor, I'm assuming that's to train clerks to identify or purchase a beer and liquor license, right?
Exactly correct.
Okay, so how did your client substantially comply if this employee never went to school?
My client had right next to the cash register, cash register right next to both of them, he had samples of South Dakota driver's licenses, he had the dates, they're all exhibits in the file. He had his employees sign an agreement saying that they understood the laws and the dates and the rules as far as carding and alcohol and tobacco sales. In fact, the clerk who sold a sick bag of beer to the agent of Compliance Plus stated that my client was a stickler with respect to carding and everything in that respect. And in fact, he had not had a violation in 5 years. I think that's ample evidence that his method was working. happened here was, I don't think any amount of training would prevent this. This was a mental lapse on her part. She testified that it was simply just a math error. She looked at it, she had the sign, or she thought it was tobacco age. She did the calculation. He was 19, I believe, and she sold him a six-pack before he even got out of the door. She was turning to her supervisor, for the other clerk in the area there, and said, I think I just sold to somebody under 21. What should I do? And immediately, the agent was trying to flush the other person there. He came in and said, so minor, he violated. Basically, he was stunned.
I think, was there any evidence in the case on what this nationally recognized training program, what the subject matter is, how long does it last, is it a week or a month, what the details are, what the subject matter is covered?
I do not believe there's any evidence in the record about the specifics of what the training was at that time.
Is there any evidence in the record about what specific training program that your man conducted? I mean, did he train them in the back room for a full day, or what subjects were covered? I mean, I assume we mean something more than on-the-job training out there at the cash register.
I believe it was substantially more than on-the-job training.
Was there any evidence of what it was?
Yes, there was. There was the form that he had, all the employees signed, detailing all the regulations supplied by. With respect to, there is testimony in the record about when and where the cannabis was located at. The clerk testified that she didn't think that hand training would have made a difference in this case. I quote from page 19 of the transcript, question from Mr. McGee. This is also cited in Mr. McGee's question. Program that could help. Asked with respect to not selling the beer to a minor.
But I noticed that the legislature never made an exclusion or exception for when a mental lapse takes place, did they?
And that's why I'd like this court to request a change of compliance to the statute.
Okay, then that's why I want to know how did you substantially comply with some kind of a training program approved by the department, whether it was certified or not? How did you comply with the nationally certified program?
I believe we need to apply substantial compliance in this case, we need to step back and look at the purpose of the Safe Harbor statutes, as well as all of the other statutes in that area.
Instead of looking at the purpose for a while, I think I'd like to have you look at the subject matter of the training program. In other words, if there's 20 hours of training, you supply two, I want to know that. If there's 8 different subject matters that are covered, and they're covered over a 2-day period of time, I want to know that, and I want to know what you did in comparison.
With respect to the first half of your question, Justice Sabres, I don't believe there's evidence in the record about the specifics of the CAM training and how it was performed.
And yet your owner sent people to that nationally approved training program in the past, right?
Yes, he did, Justice Sanders. Now he has people that can train employees in-house. My understanding of what it is, essentially, is that it's videotapes that are shown, I'm guessing, over probably a 3 or 4 hour period. I don't even think it's that long, but it's what I've seen are scenarios where intoxicated person will come in and try to purchase alcohol, and the clerk will recognize the signs of intoxication and along those lines. But as far as specifics of what happened here, I don't know how any number of videotapes or training or anything else is going to help people to add 2002 minus 1981.
Well, don't they have the stickers right on the can?
That's correct, Chief Justice, and I don't believe those are required under the statutes, but my client did have those at his place of business.
Once we adopt this, what if we
baccalaureate degree because I didn't take chemistry 101, but I want to show that I didn't have a
I think the basic answer to your question, Justice Blomkamp, that's something that's going to be within the discretion of this court, as well as the circuit courts throughout the state. And if you've had two situations where substantial compliance has been extremely, I'm not sure how many times it's been argued at different stages, but I think that as the court has limited its applicability, I don't think it's going to be a widespread.
Wouldn't we be opening the door, though, once we say you don't have to go to a certified program, each one of the liquor store owners can have their own program? Once we open that door, then how many of those owners are going to say, great, now we won't have to do anything?
Well, the current situation that the department has set up, I don't see there's any damage to that in this specific case, and in these specific types of problems, because they have the videotape system that they can use it. It's fairly straightforward and cheap, and it works for the license holders to get their employees certified.
They wouldn't even have to comply with that. I mean, if we adopt the substantial compliance rule, they don't even have to watch the video. The owner gave him his own course, certified or not, good enough.
I don't think license holders take that risk. Once I talked to him and explained the length of this process, I think they just go ahead and show the videotapes, get them nationally certified as they currently are, and move on from there.
Let me ask you this. Your client's a license holder, and he understands that he has to abide by the rules promulgated by the legislature or through the Department of Revenue, right?
Correct, Justice Hans.
And I assume he can read.
Yes, he was aware.
And so, don't we assume that people are knowledgeable enough about what the requirements of the law are? So he wasn't totally caught by surprise about this 2000 legislation, was he?
I don't believe there's any testimony in the record, and I don't personally know whether he had read the safe harbor statute or not. It was passed in the...
Well, let me ask you this. Did the people who get licenses, they get copies of statutes things they have to comply with in order to operate their business in accordance with it? I mean, they don't just all of a sudden come in and say, aha, I got you. You didn't read 35.210.2, did you? I mean, it isn't like they don't know what the requirement is, because otherwise, why would he be trying to do something on his own if he didn't know he had to train his employees?
The problem there, Justice Amundson, is that it just wasn't economically feasible for clients situated, deep persons, business owners situated as my clients.
And then that gets back to the same question that Justice Sinner asked. If it isn't economically feasible, that isn't a defense in this court. That's something you got to argue to the lawmakers. If they want to issue a license, they better take that into consideration.
I believe this situation has been corrected because of the videotapes and the in-house training that currently goes on. Well, so I think that has been addressed.
You currently have a law that's in black and white. Thou shalt. It's very easy to understand what the out of compliance. If we adapt your substantial compliance theory, whatever happens to strike a judge in Rapid City is constitutes substantial compliance, might be totally different than a judge across the state up in Sisseton, where he looks at it and says, nope, that's not substantial enough. Aren't we making a shambles out of a pretty clear law by adopting?
I'd like to say no to that, Chief Justice Gilbertson, and I think the answer is no. I believe this would be such a limited exception with respect to alcoholic beverage license suspensions. Practically, I don't see this case coming up again because of the options, the training options of business owners and license holders.
Are you asking us to apply the proposed Amendment A of judicial nullification of what the legislature done here, or what?
I'm not asking this court to do that, Justice Amundson. Essentially, I think that what happened here was an injustice. My client is a good business owner. He has done everything he can to comply and prevent underage sales of alcohol. I think that's what the higher purpose of the statute is to make sure that business owners, license holders, take reasonable steps to prevent underage sales of alcohol. I believe that's what he did.
There's been a lot of people that are good drivers, but they go 80 and a 75, and they still have to pay them, notwithstanding that they didn't mean to, and they might have made a mistake, you know, but that's what you're asking us to do. And the law is pretty clear what the requirements are, isn't it?
I don't believe it's that clear. I believe that what the legislature was attempting to do was, as I stated, was to ensure that the business owners take reasonable steps.
Did the state have a certified, nationally approved, recognized training program at the time when this sale took place?
They did, and the only place...
And there was nothing that in the record that would show that your client did not know of that?
No. Okay. No, just Samson.
That's what the record is.
Yes.
Were there two people working in this establishment?
At the time, there was an experienced clerk, a licensed supervisor, and authority person.
You just made my point. Why don't, for a period of a month or until the other person becomes experienced, why doesn't just the experienced clerk sell liquor when that comes up?
I think that's... When business was slower, I think that's essentially what was happening. Business was at the time, there's testimony in the record that it was busy, it got busy, it was around Christmas time, and the supervisor clerk was handling the drive-up window, authority was handling customers inside the store, and she simply just had a mental lapse, but it was policy of my client that had to try to prevent this kind of.
Your time is up.
Thank you, Chief Justice.
Mr. McGee, you have 20 minutes, sir.
Hey, please, the court, counsel. My name is Jack McGee, and I represent the Department of Revenue in this matter. The question before the court today is whether stringent enforcement of the alcohol beverage laws remains a standard in South Dakota. Whether that standard will be relaxed to one of good enough.
Or common sense.
Excuse me, Your Honor.
Or common sense.
Common sense.
That's what he seemed to argue.
As the facts of this case are not in dispute. The employee of the Corkin bottle made an illegal sale of alcohol to a minor. She had not been certified by a nationally recognized training program approved by the Department of Revenue. The illegal sale, coupled with the failure to take the training class, resulted in the license suspension ordered by the Secretary of Revenue.
You can see that all of the other subsections, 35 to 10,
that is correct, Justice.
Only dealing with subsection 2.
That is correct, Justice.
Also dealing with the employee didn't intentionally.
There's no dispute that the clerk did not intentionally sell alcohol to a minor. I believe that the record shows that the clerk looked at the minor's identification, checked it against the legal age for selling tobacco, not the legal age for selling alcohol. The record shows the clerk testified that she was extremely nervous. She knew about this.
Other cases ending along the same situation. Stipulation.
I believe there are other cases that have stayed pending the outcome of this decision.
You don't have any.
I believe there are 7 total dealing with license suspensions. I believe 6 raised these.
So then, for someone to argue that this is a situation that only comes up once in a while, that's a little bit far-fetched just from the record that we have in this case, isn't it?
That is correct, Justice Sabers. It's come up that least 7 times since July 1st, 2000. 7 times it's reached.
How many times a year does the department send out a sting operation?
That is not in the record, Justice Sabers, but the Department of Revenue does not conduct the sting. These things were conducted by the Department of Commerce and Education, utilizing a business called Compliance Plus.
But and then when they notify the owners, the licensed owners, that there's going to be a sting operation, do they say during the month of July, during the week, the first week of July, or what? How? To what extent do they narrow the time frame?
Again, how Compliance Plus operates is not in the record, Justice Sabers. I really don't know how they prepare communities for upcoming stings.
Well, they certainly don't notify them that on such and such a day there's going to be a sting operation.
Not that I'm aware of. Apparently, in this case, the Yankton State's Attorney notified local licensees that a sting was coming. That was the state's attorney. State's attorney did that.
That's a common practice. I know they've done it here in the office on all the dealers.
I know that's happened before. Yes.
Well, how about this? The critical thing here is that you represent the department who licensed, right, these people?
That's correct, Justice.
And probably even collects tax from them when they sell things.
I would assume so, too.
Yeah. There seems to be a tax on liquor.
Yes, that is correct.
So it's pretty important to have it sold if you want to get a tax. But anyway, what about the program? How does a license holder who's out here selling to pay the state tax know about what the program is? Is that sent out to them, or is that in the record, or what? I mean, if I have a certified program that I have to comply with, it's approved by the Department of Revenue. They put their stamp on it, right?
That's
and is
correct.
That then information sent out to the license holder or what? When you get your licenses, oh, by the way, here's the program you got to comply with? Or?
Once again, that type of issue, the possibility or impossibility of attending programs, is not an issue raised by the cork and bottle in this matter. The record does not show how licensees would have known about these programs.
But there's no dispute that at the time of the sale, there was an approved, certified, national or whatever program.
There's no dispute. In fact, the owner, Mr. Jensen, testified that he could have sent his employee to a PAMS class in Sioux Falls or Mitchell for about $50.
If this conviction is upheld, again, the penalty is his licensee.
What's before the court right now is a 2-week license suspension ordered by the Secretary of Revenue. That means that the licensee cannot sell any sort of alcohol at his store for a period of 14 days. Prior to July 1st of 2000, for any violation of the alcohol beverage laws, the Secretary could either revoke or suspend for up to 60 days the license. On July 1st, 2000, 35.2.10.1 effective provides a safe harbor for those licensees who have employees that illegally sell alcohol to minors. A legislature during the 2000 session examined this whole area of license suspension. They did not change date range or the number of days that a license could be suspended. They left in place that the Secretary could suspend for up to 60 days. In this case, the Secretary of Revenue decided to suspend for up to 15 days. So the policy set by the legislature allowing up to 60 days remains in place.
So what you're saying is voluntary exercise of that discretion on the sentencing within parameters of the sentencing.
That's correct, Justice.
And there hasn't been any issues litigated as far as that rule of that.
The only issue in this case is whether substantial compliance analysis is appropriate in a case involving enforcement of the alcohol beverage laws.
Over the 5 years, he says that there has not been a violation for 5 years, but technically that may be correct, but actually all we really know is that there's not been a conviction or there's not been an enforcement of it. He's not been caught in 5 years, right?
We know that there's not been a previous violation or a violation. Violation has been determined in the previous 5 years.
Right. It's presumed to be innocent. Other than the one in this case, because he wasn't caught, he might have been.
I do not dispute that Pork and Bottle had a clean record for the 5 years prior to right. December 8th, 2000.
Is the clerk who makes the sale prosecuted here too, or just the licensee?
The clerk can be prosecuted. I believe it is a class 2 misdemeanor to sell alcohol to a person between the ages of 18 and 20. The clerk can be prosecuted for that. The clerk can lose driver's license for a period of 30 days to a year. Discretion of the circuit.
And the license holder can also be fined.
License holder can also be, yes, under this court's decision in the Hy-Vee Food Stores case, the licensee, Mr. Jensen, could also be prosecuted.
This clerk was in there.
That's correct, Justice.
This clerk is understanding. Only been
4 days and about 18 hours.
Is there a way for her to actually certify?
The testimony from Mr. Jensen, the owner, indicated that he could have sent her to Sioux Falls or Mitchell for appropriate training. But yes, it was possible for her to get the training prior to selling any alcohol.
Is there evidence in the record about turnover in these kinds of businesses?
I believe Mr. Jensen testified that the turnover rate in this type of business is fairly high, and he had, I believe, 32 employees during the course of the year. But the legislature declared its policy in 35.210.1. The legislature clearly said for subsection 2 that the employee must be certified by a nationally recognized training program approved by the Department of Revenue. Provides instruction on techniques to prevent these sales. The legislature did not say that the employee could be trained by the licensee, which is exactly what happened here. Mr. Jensen had his own internal training program. He trained the clerk and then put her in front of a cash register to begin selling alcohol.
But that's the letter of the law. No disputing that. We have employed the cases, as we said, the letter of the law. Is this a case that you should apply it? So why? Why not?
This is absolutely not an appropriate case for substantial compliance. This court has applied the substantial compliance analysis in a few narrow areas of the law. And the person has met the purpose of the statute, but through some procedural defect hasn't quite gone all the way, such as Wagner v. Truesdell, where personal service was made on the defendant through a guardian. The defendant happened to be mentally ill. Done no good to serve that defendant personally, because it wouldn't have been effective. In cases requiring strict compliance, where the language of the statute is clear and unambiguous, this court has said that alcohol beverage laws are to be strictly enforced. I take that to mean strictly complied with. Substantial compliance would not be appropriate. The party has to meet each requirement listed, 35.2.10.
So what you're saying is, if I go ahead and get a license to sell alcohol, which is basically a high-risk business,
what the legislature has said, and that is what this court has said. State of South Dakota, as this court has said in the Hy-Vee Food Stores decision.
You know that everybody didn't agree with that.
Yes, sir. But this court did say that South Dakota has an unwavering public policy against the sale of alcohol to minors.
Hy-Vee didn't deal with suspension license.
No, Justice Amundson, it dealt with prosecution of Hy-Vee Food Stores, Inc.
Corporation
itself for the acts of its employees. But that unwavering public policy mandates stringent enforcement, and it mandates intensified supervision over those who sell alcohol. That is what the Department of Revenue is doing in this matter. It is strictly enforcing the laws passed by the legislature, strictly enforcing the public policy, and it is implementing intensified supervision over those who do sell it. It's my understanding that the cork and bottle does have a packaged liquor license. Sell liquor for off-sale consumption. They also have an on- and off-sale beer license. They can sell beer for off-sale or beer for consumption on the premises. I have never been in the establishment myself, but from the testimony of the hearing, I understand it has a front door where people enter, and it also has a drive-through window where people can drive up and purchase.
It basically sells liquor.
I don't know for sure, but that is my reading of the record.
It sounds like if he is suspended for 2 weeks, he gets suspended.
That's the way it sounds.
Suspending his license has been stayed.
That's correct, Justice Sabres. The department did not object to the cork and bottle.
There are a little inequity in the law that carrying out what Justice Sabres has talked about. Having to be in a grocery store here a couple months ago and here they have these tarps. Where the beer is, so I asked him if it works. He said, we have to include a breaking signal. The customer can't sell beer for 2 weeks. Now, a grocery store that size, 2 weeks of not selling beer is probably a big deal, but it is a big deal for a sole proprietor. Something we should consider as far as substantial compliance.
The legislature did not choose to make that a factor in determining whether the secretary had authority or in determining whether a licensee meets the safe harbor from license suspension. Justice Gilbert.
So you're saying even if the secretary wanted to be a nice guy, you know, a poor personality couldn't do that?
The secretary has discretion to either revoke or suspend for up to 60 days. Secretary has chosen in this case to suspend for a period of 14 days.
So the discretion then would only be on the length of the suspension.
Violation exists irregardless, separate and apart from the secretary. Violation occurs when the secretary is involved in determining what type of revocation or suspension is applied.
Right. Is the Secretary of Revenue some kind of suspension every time stays? Or do they let them go sometimes?
The history of the license suspension initiative last couple of years is not in the record. I can tell you, for a period of approximately a year and a half while this initiative was being implemented, every violation that came before the Department of Revenue, the license was suspended unless the licensee fell within the safe harbor of the statute.
When you say the director has the right to suspend or revoke, can you, like, suspend the suspension on condition? Could he do that? Does he have that authority? In other words, you know, I sometimes, a judge will say, I'm going to sentence you to 2 years, but I'm going to suspend that on the condition that you abide by the law. Does the Department of Revenue, the Secretary, could he do that? I assume he could.
I would assume so, too. The revocation and suspension statute is permissive. It's not mandatory. But to get into that type of action might expose the Secretary to some sort of arbitrary and capricious analysis if he were treating licensees differently without validation.
You have a problem.
Thank you, Justice. In closing, the legislature did not provide that some other type of training program would suffice to bring a licensee within the safe harbor provisions. The legislature clearly said that the employee had to be certified by a nationally recognized training program approved by the Department of Revenue. That did not happen in this case. It is undisputed. The clerk did not attend such a training program.
Do you know what the elements of that training program is, like in Sioux Falls or Mitchell? Is there one going on at all times? How many days does it last? How many hours of material is covered?
Once again, what's involved in the training program is not brought out on the record, because that was not an issue raised by working bottles.
Well, it is an issue raised in substantial compliance. I mean, how do you know what's substantial compliance unless you know what to measure against?
The department's position has been all along, Justice Sabers, that substantial compliance is not appropriate in this matter. It is a case of strict compliance with the statutory requirements.
Thank you, Counsel.
Thank you.
One more question. The Mitchell and the Sioux Falls schools are both nationally certified.
That is correct, Justice.
Do you know how long those schools are?
Thank you, Counsel. Mr. Jones, you have 10 minutes, sir.
First of all, I think if the purpose of these statutes is to prevent sales of alcohol to underage persons, no better motivator than money. My client knew that. He tried to implement that with a $300 bounty. Essentially, you can sit in all the classes you want, and you're still going to have mental errors. Case where we just slipped through, I don't believe my client could have done anything more than he did.
Well, let me ask you this. When you talk about mental lapse, if I drive through a stop sign and hit someone, that's a mental lapse.
Clearly.
And then I'm liable there, right?
You'd be negligent.
Right. And I could also probably lose my license or have some restrictions put on it.
Negligence, failure to yield, I don't believe the license is negligent.
Well, I could go to court for failure to stop, and then the court kind of got a little leeway of what they could do with me.
Sure. I think that gets to a little bit of what Mr. McHugh was getting into with the specific penalties.
But what I'm getting to, mental lapse isn't anything in 35.2.10.1.
I don't believe it's probably written in any statute.
Seems to be that Mr. McGee is suggesting that he needs some discretion to be exercised.
I would agree with that, except that the way I believe the department handles these is that essentially every license holder gets a 2-week suspension no matter what the facts are. And I would argue that if that is indeed the case, that is in itself arbitrary and would submit the secretary to exposure on those grounds. If there's different facts in these different violations, there should be different suspensions. It shouldn't be 2 weeks across the board. That's what arbitrary is.
So let me ask you this. Is that litigated?
No, I don't believe at the time there was any way to show that. I believe with the six other cases that this court is aware of, I don't know the specifics of those cases, but I would submit that most likely every single one of those cases probably has a two-week suspension. I don't know that for a fact, but I would assume that.
You say the owner did everything he possibly could to prevent this type of thing, and yet we talked earlier when you were up there about the fact that he could have only permitted an experienced employee, the one at the window in this case, to have sold every alcoholic beverage sale to anyone who was, you know, under 30, and he could have done that. But he could have also sent the employee to school before she started work, or he could have been there himself supervising that someone looked too young, was a minor, you don't use the tobacco age, not the liquor, you do use the liquor. So there's a lot of other things he could have done.
I don't believe in this kind of thing. There's probably ever a limit on what. But obviously, I don't think that my client could be at his place of business every single day. He's open. Maybe he's open 6 a.m., 2 a.m., maybe over 24 hours right now.
Well, the previous cases where we've recognized substantial compliance, there's an argument there that it should be. There are clearly civil cases. Here, where you're asking us to get into the criminal area of the law, you recognize substantial compliance. Say a person's been drinking, driving home, stopped by an officer, and they test out at a 1.0, and the new limit's now 0.08. Oh, I substantially comply, I suppose.
I don't believe this gets into any kind of substantial compliance applicability in criminal cases. This was essentially a civil penalty.
Right, but it also carries with it a threat of criminal prosecution.
Extend it. Obviously, if my client was criminally prosecuted, I would probably argue to extend it to that. I don't think the court needs to reach that issue with this case.
How about someone asked you, and I think you did say, we could have had the other experienced employee sell it. Did you say that?
I didn't say that.
Okay, but was the other employee there had more experience, obviously?
Yes.
Is there any dispute of that?
No, there's no dispute.
That employee trained?
I don't believe that's in the record. I can't say one way or the other where she was.
Well, what I'm saying is that if she was trained, it'd be pretty obvious to your client that they had to be trained.
I don't believe I understand your question, Justice Hanson.
What I'm saying, if employee A, your client has sent employee A to be trained, he knows employee B has to be trained. That
if that were the case. As far as the question you asked to Mr. McGee about testimony on where the courses were held and whether Pork and Bottle could have sent employees, on page 10 of the transcript, there was, by my client's testimony, there was one TAM course offered in Yankton, and he sent his employees at the time to that course. After that, the question was from.
So then, if he sent employees there, he knew he had.
That he had done, yes.
Okay,
he sent him there. I don't know specifically what he knew. I can't speak of that. But the specific question was, and where would these employees, if you got a new employee, where would they have to go to the TAM course? And the answer from the Pork and Bottle owner was, well, either Sioux Falls or Mitchell. There was no testimony on when. Was the next question was what he charged for that? The answer, I think, was $50. On top of that, he'd have to pay your transportation costs. He also had to pay our go there, I would assume. Great. And my understanding of when the courses were offered was that it was sporadically offered, and there was no guarantee. If they were offering these courses in Yankton every week, then I think strictly construing the statute would be appropriate. with this case, I don't think it's reasonable to expect a business owner, these economic conditions, go to these kind of lengths when he's got testimony on that same page of the transcript. He had 32 W-2s. That's a tremendous turnover, and it's just not financially feasible for business owners just to have to do that.
So let me ask you, talking about what courses are offered and the economic impact and how it works to the detriment of an education license, shouldn't the license holder have then put that into the record to show what an inconvenience it is, how difficult it is, so that we would see that, to review it?
I believe that is.
You think it is? Or is it from what your client testified?
Yes. So there was only two witnesses at the hearing. I believe my client testified to be difficult. If substantial compliance, if this court were to determine that substantial compliance is appropriate, then I need to... I have an issue with Judge Rush's decision. Judge Rush looked at substantial compliance and ruled that substantial compliance, even in effect, that if the purpose of the statute or group of statutes must be served. And Judge Rush's purpose was to prevent the underage sales of alcohol. I submit that this is essentially a catch-22, that if the purpose is to prevent underage sales, then there won't be a violation. If there's no violation, we're not even getting here. So under Judge Rush's rationale, it would never come up. I would submit that the purpose of these statutes, as I stated earlier, is to ensure that license holders take reasonable steps to prevent the sales. I believe that's what my client did, and I believe that substantial compliance is appropriate in this case.
Judge Rush did rule about substantial compliance while that your client did not substantial compliance.
I'm not sure if it's clear from Judge Rush's ruling what his ruling was on
that. But you said he considered.
I believe he did do a substantial compliance analysis, but he ruled that if the purpose is to prevent underage sales, then underage sale occurred, then he doesn't need to reach it. I think if substantial compliance is going to be applied to that, I mean, that's a flaw. There's no point to apply anything because it would be a violation. And it's kind of a logical...
Obviously, the statute said that you should have certified training, and you didn't. For this employee.
I don't believe he reached that issue either. That you ruled that because a violation occurred, that's substantial.
Time has expired, Counsel.
Thank you, Justice.
The court will be in recess for 10 minutes.